Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
Hey everyone, welcome back to a new episode of Inside China Tech. So the big news in this week's China tech scene is Meituan Dianping's earnings result, as well as, you know, news that they're paring back sort of their mobile operations in international markets. So today I have with me Michael Norris, who is a Shanghai-based consultant who regularly consults and writes about companies like Meituan and Alibaba's Ele.me. And so, yeah, let's listen to what you have to say. Let's get right into it. Hey, Michael, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
Yes, very good. So today we are very happy to have you on to talk about this very sort of famous business model that a lot of Chinese tech companies have. So it's this platform ecosystem model. So maybe, Michael, if you could do us a favor and tell us what this model is exactly.
Yeah, sure. So in the tech world, we use the term platform a lot. When I'm talking to clients about China, I tend to talk in terms of super apps and ecosystems. So in the US, mobile experiences are unbundled. And so both enterprise and consumers have figured out how to navigate standalone mobile apps to get what they want. So Facebook, Messenger, YouTube, Yelp, Venmo all exist separately. But in China, these super apps bundle these different services together, and experiences are accessed through a super app. So the best example is probably WeChat, which is an internet Swiss Army knife that has everything from messaging to payments to maps, etc., all housed within this one super app. And then the super apps themselves are housed in ecosystems. So the part of the Chinese internet that Tencent owns or operates is its ecosystem. And that's enclosed experiences that make it easy to accomplish certain tasks, with the precondition being that the tasks occur within the set of apps or super apps owned by one digital giant or their partners. So, for instance, it's easy to click from a Weibo post to Tmall, and that's because both of these apps exist in Alibaba's ecosystem. But it's slightly more complicated to do the same thing if you want to go from Tmall, from WeChat to Tmall or Little Red Book to Tmall, because they don't exist in the same ecosystem.
Okay, so just a disclaimer here, SCMP is owned by Alibaba. But also, so earlier you mentioned that, so for companies like Tencent and like Alibaba, they kind of operate within their own ecosystem. So is that also to say that these companies operate different, say, like entertainment businesses or travel services or like food deliveries, like they operate their own and it's all within one ecosystem and they're often rivals of each other? Is that right to say?
Yeah, that's quite fair. So for instance, in China, we've got our two sort of food delivery or on-demand services heavyweights. On the Tencent side, we have Meituan Dianping, and then on the Alibaba side, we have Ele.me. And you can tell that the ecosystem runs through each because of their preferred payment partner. So the preferred payment partner of Ele.me is Alipay, and that's because they exist in the Alibaba ecosystem. And on the other side, when it comes to Meituan Dianping, their preferred payment partner is WeChat Pay. And again, that's a function of the fact that they exist in the Tencent ecosystem.
Okay, so with Meituan and Ele.me, you know, they're both very similar. They both deal a lot with food. What are some of the major sort of differences between these two platforms?
So I think the major difference going forward will be Meituan's software as a service solution for its restaurant partners. So it's looking to develop that quite strongly. Ulama is looking to develop a similar solution, but I don't think it has the same scale and investment behind it to be able to catch up. Instead, Ulama, I think, is moving towards being the logistics network for a range of different services. I'm excited by its potential to offer same day or even 30-minute delivery for e-commerce orders. So if we think about the way that Ulama is set up right now, it can do both food delivery, it can do grocery delivery, and if we just extend ourselves a little bit more, it could probably do e-commerce delivery as well. So dispatching deliveries from Tmall or the Taobao marketplaces. And that would give Tmall and Taobao customers the option potentially of getting their product within the hour or waiting a couple of days via a regular courier service. And again, if you're in a fix and you need something urgently, the ability to be able to have that same day delivery, which is a feature that Alibaba's competitor Jingdong has, but Alibaba does not have at the moment. That seems like a logical place for Ulama to be able to develop and as well strengthen Alibaba's overall ecosystem and proposition to consumers.
What is the benefit actually for companies to sort of push this ecosystem model? Why is it so important for them to have users use as many services as they want within this ecosystem?
I guess when it comes to China's digital giants, they have a fascination with traffic being the internet traffic and the users. And the idea is to service those users within a range of services without them going and giving traffic to your competitor. So I guess one of the key differences in terms of how your China internet entrepreneurs and perhaps your internet entrepreneurs in the States think about users and traffic is that Chinese entrepreneurs have, internet entrepreneurs have a fascination with ensuring that even once a user has finished that element of their transaction, then the next thing and then the next thing and the next thing that they go and do is facilitated by that partner ecosystem. Whereas in the US, entrepreneurs are far more happy to design a great product. And once that the user has used the product, then they're happy to see that traffic go. So it's I guess the difference, if we were to sort of simplify it, is just around how those two different sets of entrepreneurs conceptualize both the acquisition and the retention of traffic.
Yeah, so Michael, it really sounds to me like for China, they're very much more concerned about user stickiness, which is like if one user is able to be in one ecosystem and is able to do a range of things, whether it be calling a taxi or ordering food or playing games or messaging their friends, that they're more likely to then be compelled to use other services.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, that has knock-on effects when it comes to monetization. So I guess your typical path to monetization in a Chinese internet entrepreneur's mind is first get a bunch of users and then increase the user stickiness and then take that user stickiness to market so that you can get more ad revenue or that you can get more in-app spending and then boost those as part of your next phase of growth.
Yeah, and that also helps with like advertising, right? Like being able to compile like user data or have an overview of how consumption is a thing so that they can better target advertisements.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, some data is more valuable than others. So for instance, if we're talking in the context of food platforms, understanding the food preferences of hundreds of millions of people across different districts is, of course, very valuable. But when it comes to perhaps things like a personal mobility on a share bike, that data is less valuable. So again, the value is determined by the service that you're accessing.
Cool. So speaking of food delivery today, you know, we really want to do sort of a deep dive into what's happening with Meituan. So with Meituan, we know that originally they started as primarily, I think, like a more Groupon sort of thing where they were doing like group buying deals. And then they've eventually moved into food delivery, which I think is now their main sort of deal. And their main rival is Ulama, which also started out as food delivery platform. But what's interesting right now is I think these two platforms have sort of evolved into more than just delivering food to people's doorsteps. So yeah, Michael, maybe you can tell us more about how these two companies have sort of evolved from just, you know, being like a platform where people order dinner or lunch.
Yeah, sure. So I guess both Meituan and Ele.me are common insofar as they facilitate on-demand food delivery. And they're common insofar as they've extended out to other on-demand services. So this idea of hotels, movie tickets, flowers, medicine, anything that you can think of that you might need in a fix, you can pretty much be serviced by one of these two apps.
And I understand that for Meituan specifically, they also had like a big partnership with Mobike. And recently, there's been a lot of news about Meituan and Mobike. Would you be able to elaborate?
Before its listing on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange last year, Meituan acquired Mobike. And in my very humble estimation, that's been a bit of a disaster.
For listeners who don't know, Mobike is basically a bicycle sharing sort of company. So basically, Mobike and Ofo, they were these two big bike sharing companies where you could, you know, instead of having your own bike, you could just scan like a QR code and then rent a bike for half an hour and then just return it anywhere. So these two companies basically expanded globally and tried to, and it became like huge unicorns with lots of investment. However, yeah, there's been some issue with that. So, Michael, over to you.
No, that's absolutely fine. So just a little bit of context for your listeners. So just recently, we had Meituan Dianping's fourth quarter results come out. And so as part of that, we saw that one of the reasons why Meituan's loss ballooned was actually Mobike. So from its acquisition in April last year, Mobike has led to around 4.6 billion RMB in financial loss for Meituan. And as part of that, Meituan is trying to cut costs as aggressively as it can. So it's retired some of the existing fleet to be able to reduce maintenance costs. It's thinking about doing away with the Mobike app itself and then just housing it as part of Meituan to be able to reduce the sort of the development and the upkeep costs of the app. And recently, as you alluded to, it's also said that we're going to get rid of the international divisions. Again, that's a cost-cutting measure. They've got to be able to stem the loss from Mobike and see if they can try and narrow that gap between the revenue and the costs.
So I'm quite curious as to what do you think were these synergies that Meituan saw when they decided to acquire Mobike?
So I think the best way to contextualize Meituan's mobility play is that when we think about going to a restaurant or going out, which is, again, Meituan's core business, is that you need some form of transportation to both get there and get back. And last year, Meituan had two experiments in this respect. One was in Shanghai and Nanjing. It deployed like an Uber-like mobility solution. So on-demand ride hailing to be able to facilitate that need. It ran up a massive bill in challenging the incumbent, Didi, in both of those markets, but it was able to snatch away some market share from Didi. So that was the on-demand ride hailing, and then it also acquired Mobike, which is as you said, it's a share bike, or more accurately, a bike rental scheme, which you can rent a bike through a QR code. That was part of the mobility play as well. But what we found is that both of these ventures are far more expensive than Meituan had ever considered possible. So in terms of its due diligence on thinking about the costs of both undertaking a ride-sharing scheme or acquiring or operating part of a shared bike or bike rental network, it seems that some of that homework wasn't done very well. So when we're looking at the full year, Mobike has given Meituan about 1.5 billion RMB of revenue, but it's cost Meituan about 4.6 billion. So for every dollar that you get out, you're sort of losing three in this present context, which is not a good sign. And ultimately, I think Meituan will have to make a call as to whether or not it wants to continue with the transport or the mobility play, or whether it just wants to focus on its food delivery business and some of the extensions of that, like its SaaS solution for restaurants.
Yeah. So in terms of like Meituan, so like earlier we were talking about how Meituan originally really started out just as a delivery service, but then they've sort of gone into everything, like you said. They've gone into mobility, they've gone into hotels and travel services, and you know, even Ele.me is also going into delivering other, providing other sort of local services. So what exactly, why is there this push towards, you know, enabling people to either like reserve, make a reservation at a restaurant and then go there and sit in an offline restaurant and eat, or have the choice to order online and have the food at, you know, in the comfort of their own home? What is the bigger play here?
I think there's a couple of big picture pieces of thinking that sit behind this infrastructure. One, in terms of the delivery infrastructure itself, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities when it comes to the on-demand. Doesn't necessarily have to be the food delivery, but it can be on-demand anything. So when I think of Ele.me's logistics network, it's got about 3,000 distribution centers around the country. And at the moment, it's doing not only on-demand food delivery, but it's doing on-demand grocery delivery. So the logistics network that's behind Ele.me also dispatches grocery orders for Alibaba's Hema supermarkets.
What exactly is a Hema supermarket?
Oh, right. A Hema supermarket is a supermarket which is... it combines both online and offline orders in the same store. So you can walk in and you can buy your groceries just as you normally would, but also you can order groceries online from the supermarket, that particular supermarket, and have them delivered either same day or next day.
So that sounds like a big part of Alibaba's new retail push, or at least that's what they're calling it, like this integration of online and offline retail?
Yeah, that's right. So Hema was one of Alibaba's first forays into offline retailing. They've extended Hema to about 100 shops across China's different cities. And based on its financial results last year, it does very well. So in terms of the revenue that it generates per square meter, it's about 3 to 5 times more than competitor supermarkets, and 60% of its orders in mature stores are coming from online rather than walk-in. So it's been a great success, and of course part of that success, especially when you've got 60% of orders coming online, is the ability to be able to deliver that, and that's where Ele.me's logistics network comes in.
So basically, do you see that for Meituan, they're also making a similar sort of play for having it be either online or offline when it comes to food or local services?
Yeah, so Meituan has always championed the narrative of O2O, online to offline. And that means the sort of the booking or the research is done online, and then the consumer comes offline to eat, and then sort of flips back again to online to be able to pay. And so that's the sort of loop that they're looking to make. And as in the process of building up their vendor network, they've also started developing a software as a service, a SaaS solution for restaurants to be able to understand food preferences, not only of their own customers, but also neighboring customers. So what Meituan proposes to do is to be able to link up all of the restaurants that it has under its auspices and arm them with this solution so that they can understand what their most popular menu items are, whether or not the food preferences of the neighborhood are changing, what average price points look like, etc., to be able to make their vendors, one, a little bit more informed in terms of their operations, and two, ultimately more efficient in terms of how kitchens are run, how food is ordered in, and the like. So that's an exciting venture that Meituan sort of has in the works at the moment.
Yeah, so you know, we know that Meituan listed last year, and since then, really, the share price has fallen something like close to 25% since it listed, basically. Do you think that Meituan is now really under a lot of pressure to really sort of focus on the kind of businesses that it wants to continue developing, and what are the most likely businesses that it will focus on?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of Meituan's performance, it hasn't been great. So there's been the share price, as you said, has gone down. The losses sort of keep stacking up. But I'm relatively optimistic as to Meituan's, one, its position in the market and its ability to be able to focus going forward. So let me dive into both of those. In terms of its position right now, so Meituan is still the leader in terms of market share. It's done, I guess, so in terms of the users that it's generating, it's had strong user growth all through the year. And we see that its marketing costs are going down as well, which suggests to me that it's not needing to spend as much on advertising and subsidies to be able to attract users to the platform, which, if you add all of those things together, suggests that it's winning, quote unquote, against Ele.me, that it's actually strengthened its position relative to Ele.me.
Meituan is part of the Tencent ecosystem, like it's backed by Tencent, basically, right?
Yeah, correct.
So, I mean, my understanding is that then it's also easier for them to reach users because, like, as we know, Tencent's WeChat has something like over 1 billion users. And with their mini programs, like their mini apps that you can open within WeChat, people can very easily sort of access Meituan and place orders?
Yeah, that's right. So you don't necessarily have to have the Meituan app to use Meituan. You can, in WeChat, you can go into the wallet function. And then in terms of the third-party services, Meituan is sitting right there. So it's one of those services that has got, I guess, a fairly direct link to users via WeChat. In terms of how that sort of that traffic plays out, the app versus the sort of in WeChat traffic, I'm not super sure in terms of how it plays out. But what I do know is that Meituan's the number of users that it has on the platform just keeps continuing to grow and grow fairly strongly. So it's got 400 million users on the platform as of quarter four, 2018.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that obviously with WeChat being, you know, this like, I think when we think about super apps, we often bring up WeChat as the very first example, because obviously with WeChat, people use it as an everyday communication tool. And it's also helpful to have, you know, a bunch of services at your fingertips if you do want to chat. I think for Ele.me, they do sort of have like entry points in different the different Alibaba apps, such as Ant Financial's Alipay.
Yeah, that's right. So again, this is where the ecosystem comes back into it. The ability for not only these super apps themselves to be able to retain traffic, but also to be able to flip them to aligned services and keep that traffic within either the Tencent or the Alibaba ecosystem. And I think that particular way of conceptualizing the internet and conceptualizing user traffic and how it moves is instructive for both Southeast Asia, South Asia, and Africa as they move to develop and modernize their own internet ecosystem.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously at SCMP, when we cover economies like Southeast Asia, we've also seen that a lot of Southeast Asian tech companies like Grab, for example, like the ride-hailing app that's dominant in Southeast Asia, they've also sort of have said that they want to be an everyday app, which I guess is another way of saying super app. So I think for countries that are very you know, where smartphone penetration is very high and they've leapfrogged that PC generation, that the super app is really the way to go for them to access a variety of services.
Both Meituan and Ele.me have strongly built out their on-demand delivery capabilities. I think the big difference between the two is how they're going to develop moving forward. I see Meituan putting a lot more effort and resources into its SaaS solution. So what that is that it equips restaurant vendors that are on its own platform with a solution that allows them to be able to see how their restaurant is doing, what dishes are being ordered, what time of day customers are coming through, and optimize their own supply chains as a result of that. So, for instance, if we're seeing a lot more pork consumption, for them to be able to meet that demand, change the menu, et cetera, all more efficiently. So I think that's where Meituan is going to focus its attention in the coming months. In terms of Ele.me, I see it being a little bit more focused on e-commerce and supporting Alibaba in its overall e-commerce and new retail push.
Okay, so based on Meituan's latest earnings, we've seen that their operating losses had basically tripled in the third quarter. So what does this mean for Meituan's sort of profitability moving forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's the question that's on everybody's mind at the moment as we look at the future of this super app. Look, Meituan sort of breaks its business into three chunks: the food delivery, the travel, and then the other initiatives. And if we look across those three, the thing that's causing it a lot of pain right now is the other initiatives, which include Mobike. In terms of the food delivery and the travel, both are doing okay. So in terms of the food delivery profit margin increased from 9.7% to 16% across from 2017 to 2018. So I think that that's a good sign. Where the hard work is balancing, and it's a delicate balance between the sort of the commissions, the delivery fees, the driver efficiency, and the platform subsidies, making that work for the food delivery element. But it the cost of kind of like delivering a hot meal from A to B, that activity in and of itself, Meituan can derive some level of profit from that. So that's good. And in terms of going forward, if it's a little bit more delicate and a little bit more prudent about new initiatives and it tightens the marketing spend, then I think we can start to see Meituan realize its full potential, both not only as it's an app, but also in investors' mind as an investment as well.
Thanks so much, Michael, for your time. I know you're a very busy man, so I will let you get back to it.
Oh, appreciate it. Thanks very much. Anytime. Bye-bye.
So that was Michael Norris, everyone. He is a Shanghai-based consultant and he regularly, you know, shares insights about new retail. He analyzes companies like Baidu, Alibaba, Tencent, like Xiaomi, ByteDance, and Pinduoduo and JD.com. So if you're interested in what he has to say, definitely go check him out on LinkedIn. If you would like to find me online, I am on Twitter at Zensu. So that's Z-E-N-S-O-O. Also, if you're interested in our tech coverage, we are publishing stories daily. Come to scmp.com/tech. Finally, if you're enjoying this podcast, and I hope you are, please definitely rate us accordingly on iTunes, like 5 stars. You know, we are also available on Stitcher and Spotify. So definitely check us out there. Subscribe. We will be putting out new content, fresh content every week on Friday. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.